It's time for our weekly catch-up with National MP Ryan Hamilton.
Last year, the government moved to ban surcharges on contactless purchases, aiming to stop customers from being...
You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
...punished for their payment option of choice. However, last week, the ACT Party announced they would not support the bill, calling it bad economics. Last week also saw the government begin to push for the Police Amendment Bill, which seeks to, according to the government, reinstate police powers around filming and recording, as well as granting and changing other powers. Of course, the fuel crisis is still hitting New Zealand, with the government introducing a new fuel rationing plan, with the government attempting to maintain a sense of calm amidst a situation that continues to develop. This week, I spoke with National Party MP Ryan Hamilton about each of these topics, beginning with the state of the surcharge ban. Last year, the National Party introduced legislation that sought to ban in-store surcharges, decrying the annoyance to the shopper of being penalised based on which payment method they chose. Can you just walk us through the government's logic behind this move?
So I think a lot of people can resonate with, you walk into a dairy or a shop and you've got a note on the EFTPOS machine, you know, saying, you know, surcharge and may apply, and you're kind of going at whatever. But I think because every place has such a variation, some have, you know, 1.2, some have 2.3, and there's no, I guess, there's no sort of rhyme or reason from the consumer interface. You just, you know, very high trust model. You pay for the convenience of using a tap and go type payment system. Whereas in other places like the supermarket, you don't experience it. So as part of the Commerce Commission review of surcharges last year, there was some discovery that some merchants were overcharging and obviously disguising the opportunity to put a bit more profit in with that surcharge. That's not for everyone, of course, but that sort of was part of it. But also they felt that the surcharges were too high, and with the changes that they implemented in December of last year, that it would actually reduce the surcharge payment by around 50%, which was, you know, quite a significant drop. And so at the time we were thinking that was a perfect time to clean up or sanitise that interface with the customer, because the margin that the merchant would be incurring would be, you know, literally cut in half. Since then, so we haven't had the data come through yet from that Commerce Commission change, so it'd be really fascinating to see how that flow through has now started to take place. And so the Minister wanted to sort of analyse that before making next steps. But obviously it was a bit noisy and different parties, you know, sort of postured and took different views, because a lot of shopkeepers felt that then they were going to absorb that surcharge and that it was an unfair burden on them. Whereas other customers like the idea of, you know, a clean interface, because it's just one, the price of the till is the price you pay. So there's a lot of mixed views around the table. Ultimately, we're just trying to make the experience as frictionless as possible for the consumer. And we're doing a lot of other stuff in the banking sort of ecosystem, if you like, around open banking and fintechs and things. But where this has got to is we're just trying to work through how we can advance this system in a way which is going to get the most buy-in across government, but also from a retailer's association perspective as well.
All right, yeah, you've signalled to it there a little bit, but particularly the ACT Party has kind of looked at this legislation and called it bad economics. What is the National Party's response to this, and is there what is the sense of actually progressing this bill without the support of a coalition partner?
Well, you might have seen last week there was, you know, the Minister in charge is also talking to Labor as well. We are trying to find as much bipartisan, you know, pathway through this as well, because I think, you know, we don't want, no politician wants business owners to be paying or absorbing more costs than they need to, especially in, you know, the challenging times we're in. But we also want to make the experience as consistent as possible for all Kiwis, you know, across the payments ecosystem. So sure, there's a lot of conversations at the moment. and there'll be a little bit of posturing from other parties, but, you know, we're hopeful that we can find a way through all this.
Turning elsewhere, the government has also moved last week to push through legislation giving the police new powers. Can you explain the rationale behind this new legislation?
Yeah, sure. So the bill is it's being passed to respond to a court ruling that essentially restricted the police's ability to record images and sound in public places. But by allowing the appropriate use of some recording or images in those places, and sometimes private, it's actually quite useful for crime prevention and intelligence gathering and other functions of the police, because at the moment it's sort of almost like a black spot in terms of the police's arsenal to be able to use material or, you know, visual recording, which they know could be helpful in clarifying guilt in a case. But at the moment, that restriction, you know, the restriction limits them. So this is just an appropriate way to expand those powers to basically help keep Kiwis safe and hold offenders accountable. There's also a few other, because it's an amendment bill, there's a few other things in that bill as well, including extending police's ability to set up temporary road closure powers around parks, reserves, beaches and car parks. And that can help, you know, stop vehicles that might be, you know, suspicious, and also obtain identifying particulars for the use of infringement and arrest without warrant those who fail to comply. So it sort of seeks to amend a few, I guess I wouldn't say it's an omnibus bill, but it's more of a holistic bill that tidies up a few of those and opens up a few of those aspects.
The legislation has seen criticism, though, from the Privacy Commissioner about the bar being set too low, and with experts expressing concerns over police discretion, with the opposition mirroring the same arguments. What defence does the government have for the concerns that the bar here is set too low for the police potentially overriding people's privacy?
Well, that's always a tension point. I think I'm just trying to work out. I can't work out whether it's gone through select committee or not, because obviously that would be the appropriate mechanism for Privacy Commission and you know, opposition to it to be fleshed out. I think the bill's been introduced, but it might be being passed this week. So yeah, I couldn't comment on that specifically. But if it is being passed, then that select committee process would have had the opportunity to have that input and obviously, you know, make any appropriate amendments that might be required.
But kind of looking at the rationale behind the move, at least, what does the government kind of acknowledge the fact that obviously people are likely to be a little bit up in arms about the idea of the police having more powers to record them?
Yeah, but I guess it comes back to that balance, right? Because there might be a feeling of Big Brother, but then there's also of like when something goes, you know, bad, or someone, you know, or someone's daughter gets assaulted, you know, and there's image that can actually verify the perpetrators and hold them to account, I think people very quickly understand that it's used in an appropriate place. It's not like it's going to be a publicly available source of, you know, visual images. It's, you know, those things are used with pretty strict protocols around the police. Everything the police do is, you know, is subject to independent police complaints authority. It gets audited, you know, and the police have already had quite a lot of, you know, challenging press in the last wee while. So those aren't the sorts of things that are taken for granted.
So is there a commitment then from the government to make sure that the safeguards around police discretion and how these powers will be used remain safe and fair?
Yeah, I think that's implicit with anything we do with police. I mean, you know, they have very strict protocols and processes, so, you know, those processes are implicit, and there's also checks and balances along the way as well. We've also been progressing the antisocial road use legislation bill, which will give more clarity and consistency for police with boy racers or antisocial street users as well, with higher infringements and the ability to destroy vehicles as well, which is there's a reasonable threshold to do that, but was certainly sending a clear message that that sort of behaviour is, you know, really high risk. You know, when convoys of 200-plus cars block roads, and especially in rural areas, and Fonterra milk trucks, you know, can't get through, or in one case got violently attacked. Yeah, there was just a bit of a rebalancing. This government's really focused on and upping the ability for police to act and protect and keep our community safe.
And finally, last week the government announced a fuel rationing plan for dealing with the ongoing crisis. Can you just quickly walk us through what this plan entails?
Sure. So the New Zealand fuel response has been broken into four phases, which essentially sort of steps through the process as the fuel crisis might, potentially get worse. And so the first one, phase one, is essentially called watchful, where the government's monitoring stocks and shipments, publishing weekly stock updates. And in terms of the public, they continue business as per usual, but they're saying check out ECA's information on fuel saving measures. But if the market continues to, or the fuel market continues to escalate, then they'll move into phase two, which is a precautionary approach. And obviously the government's processes ramp up where they'll implement a public sector fuel response plan. At that point, the community is still able to access fuel as they normally would, but obviously with a bit more, you know, consideration perhaps given to combining trips or other modes of transport. And then it goes on to phase three and phase four. Both those are still currently under consultation. But under phase three, there's a banned approach where the government has essentially stepped out initially general retail sales to consumers, then it might have to claw back. Then it's just allowing commercial use, and then it'll drop to band C. We've got essential services like public transport, essential infrastructure maintenance, etc. Then goes band B, band A. We've got ultimately, with the most restrictions, we still want uncapped ability on life supporting services, emergency services, corrections, hospitals, etc. So there's a really pragmatic plan that's, you know, being published. The phase three and four are still being worked on because we want to make sure we get that right. And obviously they'll be constantly assessing if we go into phase two, can we drop back into phase one, and, you know, similar across all those phases. So, yeah, it's quite a dynamic situation, as you've seen. A lot of it beyond our control, and Australia in the same position. In fact, I heard this morning they're actually sort of replicating similar to our four-phase response. And then obviously, you know, we're looking at where the most vulnerable are affected, how we can support them with temporary targeted and timely response, which we talked about last week. So pretty dynamic situation, but unfortunately we've just got to take one step at a time with it.
The government has repeatedly kind of emphasised that they're not worried about how this crisis is going to go, but with experts forecasting that maybe the crisis will continue to get worse, and especially with New Zealand households, you know, really feeling it in their pockets, is this plan going to really see that get better for New Zealanders, or is there more support to come?
I think there is more support to come, and the plan will work. I mean, it's a dynamic plan, and you can see it's sort of a step change. Like, if the crisis deepens and we respond accordingly, and we've got to protect those valuable services as we go through that process. But the government's also working, you know, hard at a whole range of options. So more fuel supply, more diversification in terms of the fuel we can get into the country, even if it means temporarily lowering the standards. Because we know that the Strait of Hormuz has 20% of the world's supply, but there's also 80% still flowing. And so our Prime Minister is having strong talks with, you know, our allies in Singapore, Australia, I think it's Malaysia, and some of those other countries where we've got, you know, bilateral relationships and agreements in within the Pacific region. So we've got to work collectively as well, so we can keep just all optionality open and diversification, especially in these times. So it's not just it's not a reactive response. There's a lot of proactivity happening across government. So I think certainly New Zealand can feel comforted that we're actively engaging and tackling this head on.
That was National Party MP Ryan Hamilton on the government surcharge ban, their amendments to policing, and the ongoing fuel crisis response.
That was our weekly chat with National MP Ryan Hamilton.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.